Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca, Mesut Özil. Corner, llegó el gol de Olivier Giroud. Marca el Arsenal, marca Olivier Giroud. Gol de los Gunners.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to another Arscast Extra. As always, especially this week, with James from Gunner Blog. Goodly morning to you.
Goodly morning.
How's it all going?
It's okay. I mean, when we do this once a week, I can sort of... You miss out on some of the minutiae of my life, some of the little things. Like this morning, I mean, I'm a bit of a state, to be honest with you. I woke up and my shoulders have done that thing where, I don't know, the limited amount of muscle within them seems to have all fused together.
Oh, no.
Do you know that sensation where, like, you can't really... I mean, I look like Quasimodo, more like Quasimodo than usual.
It reminds me of that bit in The Simpsons when Homer says, you know that pain you get in your heart where it's like 1,000 knives of fire stabbing you? And people go, I'm not sure you're supposed to get that.
Yeah, well, maybe it is one of those. I also had to leave the house in a rush this morning and I only had time to put one contact lens in. So imagine a man with one eye shut, one shoulder about 4 inches higher than the other, sort of limping through Islington.
Yeah.
And you've got a picture of me. But anyway, how are you?
I'm okay. What happens when you only got one contact lens in? Does everything, was it the left one or the right one?
Everything's 3D.
Do you have to walk on one side of the road to make everything okay?
My right eye had a contact lens in, and I just sort of shut the left one and hoped for the best. It worked out okay.
Okay.
I mean, it's not ideal, but look, I'm here. That's the important thing.
That is the important thing. I'm also in great pain this morning, if that helps you in any way, if it makes you feel better. Played football last night.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
I also played football yesterday. How did you get on?
We lost 4-0 to a team that come from an Italian restaurant in Dublin. They're very good, you see. They're actually very good at football. And we're not very good. Not as good as them, anyway. They're organised and can pass the ball to each other and things.
And all that. Yeah.
No, well, they're quite attacking, actually. We were the ones who were sitting off deep and what have you. But I did score quite a good own goal. That was good.
What sort of own goal?
Well, a corner came in. And it was whipped into the near post. So the guy that I was marking ran across me and I got across him and took a swipe at the ball. But because he was leaning into me, I sliced it past the goalkeeper into my own net. It was one of the faintest of connections, you know, that way where you just kind of, and the keeper put his hands up and he didn't get there. And then the guy, he ran off like he'd scored it. Like he's
That's your goal, damn it.
That's what I said to him. I said, that was my goal, fucker. You're not having that. He's going, I score. No, you fucking didn't. I scored it.
Do you score a lot of own goals? Are you a sort of Jamie Carragher, Lee Dixon figure?
No. Very few own goals in my career.
So the ones that you do score, you want to hold on to?
Absolutely. Especially when the guy runs off trying to claim it for himself and everyone thinks, hey, how the fuck did he manage to score that goal when he was, in fact, nowhere near the ball? Nobody seemed to ask that question. If they'd had the, you know, BT camera angles there, it would have proven it was my goal.
You need to get up in front of the dubious goals committee.
Yeah.
State your case.
Something like that. But yeah, today I'm in pain, but that's fine.
That's competitive sport, guys.
At least you're
not like Daniel Sturridge. You're ploughing on. You're here nonetheless.
Yeah, I know what pain and real pain is.
Exactly.
There's no danger of this podcast not going ahead because of that. So look, where do we start today? Actually, I suppose we should start with West Ham against Manchester United.
Ah, yeah.
That was fun.
It was fun. I mean, you know, in some ways, it's a shame that there wasn't slightly more at stake because West Ham had kind of bollocksed it up at the weekend. But, I mean, it was fun on the pitch and bizarre off it, wasn't it? I mean, those scenes of... you know, the players on the bus, Lingard, Jesse Lingard screaming, "Mummy, mummy," as as bottles hit the windows.
I think, in fairness, he was being a bit tongue-in-cheek, but...
He was.
You can imagine a couple of our players might not have been.
No, probably not. I think they genuinely would have been cowering and screaming that. But, yeah, very, very strange. West Ham embracing their traditions there.
Well, this is it. But, I mean, you know, people say, oh, look, it's a great throwback to the 1970s or the 80s when men were men and football was something to be feared and enjoyed. But, you know, it's like a few bottles thrown at a coach. A bottle is nothing. When Arsenal went to play West Ham in the 1970s, there was a cauldron full of boiling oil thrown through the windows of
the bus.
And if
they threw bottles, they were magnums.
Yeah.
You know, fired via, like, siege warfare catapults.
Exactly. Because West Ham fans were known for buying magnums of champagne. Yeah. That was their thing at the time.
That was their thing. And, you know, they fired them directly at the horse and cart on which Arsenal arrived.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few bottles. I mean, come on. I mean, unseemly scenes, it has to be said. Unseemly.
Did someone headbutt a coach?
Yes, this is the report from this morning where one West Ham fan was seen to be headbutting the window of the Manchester United coach. Now, it conjures up an interesting image, doesn't it? Because the windows of those coaches are quite high. So was he leaping? Did he have a small portable trampoline beside the coach to jump up and give it a headbutt? Very strange behaviour altogether, though.
Where does that rank against punching a horse?
I think it's right up there.
Yeah.
It's right up there.
I guess we should have more issue with punching a horse because a horse is a sentient being.
Yeah.
Whereas a coach, as far as I'm aware, is not.
Yes, but a horse could also kick the fuck out of the guy trying to punch it. He could stamp him or bite him. You know, horses have big, hard teeth and, you know, they've got good hooves for kicking. So there is a touch of, well, you know, come on, horse, defend yourself against this fucking moron who's punching a horse. But punching or loafing an inanimate object seems very strange behaviour altogether.
I agree with you. But they're West Ham fans, you know, what do we expect?
Absolutely. Now, here, let me ask you this. What is your take on Upton Park versus the Boleyn Ground? Where do you stand on this, the most,
hot
I suppose,
issue
pressing? Yeah, it is a hot issue.
I'll be honest, I don't really understand it. I would say Upton Park.
Yeah.
But I think that legally it is the Boleyn Ground. Is that correct?
I don't really know, because my entire football supporting life, it was known as Upton Park. Like, always. Always. I don't think if you go back in the books that you used to get, you know, the books where you get with all the stats, you get a book for all 92 clubs in the Premier League, and it was, you know, Arsenal, highest attendance, all that kind of stuff. But the ground, you know, it was always called Highbury, or West Ham's ground was always called Upton Park. I never really heard anybody, until quite recently, refer to it as the Boleyn Ground. I thought that was odd.
Yeah, I think it's... someone said to me it was kind of a branding exercise because you can't really trademark or copyright Upton Park because it's a tube station.
Right.
So there was some sort of issue there. I mean, you know, Highbury, of course, was called Arsenal Stadium, wasn't it, officially?
Yeah, that's what it used to have to be called. Did it have to be called that for Champions League games for some weird reason?
Maybe.
Or no, actually, it could be the Emirates that has to be called the Arsenal Stadium for Champions League game. I can't remember. I'm talking out my hole here. But, I, you know, they had all these celebrations afterwards with all the famous players, Marlon Harewood.
Samusi Abu.
Dean
Thomas
Ashton.
Thomas Retker. Yeah, exactly.
All the great legends.
Wheeling them out.
But you know what? I feel like they missed a trick because of the fact they changed it from Upton Park to the Boleyn Ground. And will I tell you why?
Go on.
They could have had a range of musical items based around Billy Joel's Uptown Girl.
Oh, of course.
You see, now, I'm nothing if not well prepared, James, so turn up your volume here. I've got a little something to play you. This is what they could have gone with. Floodlights, so it wasn't dark. I once went there with a bloke called Mark. He got eaten by an angry shark. He was See?
Incredible. Why they missed such an obvious trick there. Why were you not the master of ceremonies at this particular event?
I don't know. I mean, think of all the things they could have done with that one association, with that one song by that one guy.
If they just used their imaginations.
I know. Just pathetic.
Outrageous.
And what did you make of that? Apparently this thing was on Sky afterwards. They were showing all this. I didn't watch it because...
Frankly,
I don't give a fuck about that kind of shit. But this sort of stage-managed goodbye to Upton Park Bowling Ground. Yeah, I don't know. Why was it on Sky? And A, you know, it's not a bit overblown, all a bit sort of mawkish and... Wasn't winning a game of football enough? Shouldn't that have been the final memory that all these people had of their ground that they've gone to for all these years? A great 3-2 win against Manchester United. Fans flooding out of the stadium. Instead, they had taxis. There were taxis on the pitch, apparently.
There were, yeah. Claret
Why?
Blue taxis.
Why? Because it's London, London taxis, lots of taxi drivers support West Ham. What's the thing? Why weren't there other modes of transport on there?
I suppose
if they put a bus on, they'd be afraid that all the fans would come on the pitch and try and loaf it.
Well, that's the issue. You know, they'll get some West Ham fan trying to attack it. If they put a tube train on, someone will come and, you know, try and kick it in the nuts. But I think it was something of the sort of bizarre Olympic closing ceremony to it, wasn't there?
Yeah.
But,
you know, weird.
To each their own. If you want to fight a bus... That's your prerogative.
Yes, it absolutely is. Now, that wasn't the only football that took place last night. And we'll talk about the football that's going to take place tonight. But Arsenal's under-21s gained promotion to the first division of the under-21 league last night with a 3-1 win over Aston Villa.
Of course.
Now, did you see the name of the guy who scored for Aston Villa? This is brilliant.
Yeah, I did. He had all the names.
Russian Marcus Amari Hepburn Murphy. I mean, what's his nickname? Is it Rushy, Mark, Ami, Heppy, Murph? Or do you, like, mix it all together?
Them.
Yeah, you combine it, so you call him Ramarha Murph.
Or does his name have an acronym, maybe?
Or M-A-H-M.
Ramaham.
Yeah.
That's not going to work.
No, it's not. There's only one vowel in there, so that's kind of fucking that up.
I just call him Bob or Steve or something.
Trev.
Yeah.
But,
you know, I mean, what's he got on the back of his shirt? That's my question.
That's a good question. I didn't notice. Probably Murphy or something.
I remember the days when I thought Oxlade-Chamberlain was a mouthful.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have really, really small font on the back of his shirt.
Yeah.
But after the game, did you notice this? The captain of the under-21s, Julio Plegazuelo.
Very good pronunciation.
Thank you very much indeed.
I've got no idea really, but yeah.
One of our Spanish London hybrid accent guys was interviewed by the official site about what he felt. After winning this. So I'm going to play this for you again, so you might want to just turn your volume
up. Turn you up, yeah.
This is the interview as went out after the game.
You've won promotion to the top tier of under-21 football. How's that feel?
Yeah, it's been a great season. I think the lads deserve it, especially today. They fucking gave everything today. And we really deserved it to get promoted.
That's brilliant. And did that go out live? Or?
Yeah, that's gone out. So basically...
They fucking gave everything today.
They fucking gave everything today.
They fucking gave everything. That's amazing. I really enjoy that.
They fucking gave everything
today. I hope he makes
the
first
today.
Team just so we can remember and commemorate that moment.
Yeah, that would
and
be...
to see him do that regularly on Sky Sports.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Like in every single interview that he does, he throws in a different swear word. So he'd have to work through all the big ones like fuck and shit, piss, bollocks, wanker, twat, tits, all that kind of stuff. And then he'd have to get really creative like... Wank Blaster or Jizz Monkey and all that kind of... Just as his career went on, he would become the master of inventing new swear words.
He would indeed. It was Freddie Ljungberg, of course, who did that in a post-match interview, wasn't it? And gave Ask Blog its tagline.
Yeah, this is very true. After the 2002 FA Cup final, Freddie was interviewed live on TV and he was asked how it felt and he said, it's fucking excellent. And you know what? I went looking for that today and I cannot find it anywhere.
Really?
I can't find that clip anywhere. So if
Amazed.
Anyone out there, yeah, that's incredible. If anyone out there has it or knows where we can get it, please please let us know, because it would be great to have Freddie Ljungberg. It's fucking excellent, along with Julio Pleguezuelo, because they worked. Hang on, what was it?
They fucking gave everything today.
They fucking gave everything today. Did.
What I like about that is it's a really unnecessary use of the swear word as well.
Yeah.
Like, there's no need for it in that context, but he's like, let's throw it in.
Yeah. And I like that. I'm sure he knows it's a bad word. Actually, he was on Twitter saying, oh, please forgive me for my bad language. But I think when you learn a second language, sometimes the swear words punctuate your vocabulary without you really knowing it.
Yeah, this is it. I think that was Freddie's excuse at the time. Yeah. He said, oh, we have a word in Swedish that kind of means very, that has that kind of forceful impact, but there isn't an equivalent in English, yeah. So there you go.
Yeah, so there you are. So look, if anybody does have the... if anyone does have the It's Fucking Excellent, send it across to us. Now, yesterday, of course, we got that lovely piece of art, which people seem to enjoy a great deal.
Well, good for them.
Some people enjoyed it a little bit too much.
I'm sure.
but we were talking on Monday about Jurassic Park, if you remember.
It was only a couple of days ago. I remember it well.
Yes, and you were talking about feeding John Terry to the thing in the goat. The goat
yes, lowering him in to his doom.
So I've just sent you an email there from Daniel Botset. I can't see because my screen is too small. Daniel Botset, I think it is. And he has very cleverly photoshopped you into Jurassic Park where John Terry is being lowered into the mouth of a fish dinosaur. I don't know what the name of a fish dinosaur
Some
is.
Some sort of watersaurus.
Waters. Yes, a watersaurus. Coelacanth or one of those weird things. But that's good.
A crocodinosaur of some kind. Yes, that is good. I only wish we could see this for real. On the final day of the Premier League season.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I would hire Stamford Bridge for that.
I definitely would. I definitely would hire Stamford Bridge for that.
Yeah.
What else was I going to say? Oh, there seems to be a lot of chat this morning about old granite, doesn't there? Old Granite Xhaka.
There does seem to be a lot of chat.
Concrete stories about granite.
Yeah, they're all set in stone.
Yes, come on.
Yes.
That genuinely does look to be... I mean, it's approaching the point where the whispers are becoming shouts, isn't it?
Yeah, because a newspaper from the area in which Borussia Mönchengladbach are, in Germany.
Germany,
yes. I don't know which bit of Germany it is, whether it's north, south, east, west, or somewhere in the middle. But they have reported that Arsenal made a bid of €43 million plus bonuses.
Yes, Raphael Honigstein reporting it as a total of €50 million when you include the add-ons.
Mm.
Which is an astronomically high number, isn't it? It's the same as what we paid for Mesut Ozil.
Yes, but this is the way the market is going. Adam Lallana costs £28 million.
Absolutely. I mean, in some ways, you know, what Rafael was saying, that Arsenal came in with a bid that was rejected and have come in with this huge offer, you know, at asking price in order to expedite the deal. If that is the case, I guess that's really good news. You know, that's what we want to see, how we want to see the club behaving.
Yeah, I mean, do we see that as a change of tack from Arsene Wenger?
Maybe they learnt something from Bayern Munich's activity yesterday.
Mm. Wow, they did some stuff, didn't they?
They had quite the hour, spending about, you know, £70 million in the process. But I think, it looks like an intriguing one. I think he's obviously someone the manager really rates if he's prepared to go to quite that extent to get him.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed we get some news on it soon.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be a very interesting signing. If you're going out and spending £50 million on a central or €50 million rather on a central midfield player after already buying Mohamed Elneny in January, it suggests that this is an area of the pitch that you really want to focus on. right?
Yeah.
I know we all want a striker, and I hope that we do get a striker. There are issues with our forward lines in terms of who's going to be there next season and who's not going to be there, or who's going to be fit and who's going to be available. But it's always felt to me like midfield, central midfield, has been the most dysfunctional area of the team this season, that we haven't found anything that's really worked to give us the platform to try and play the kind of football that we like to play. So perhaps in bringing in this guy, bringing in Elneny, maintaining Wilshire, I think he's going to keep Ramsey. Who else is there? Cazorla's there. Coquelin is there. Although playing for the under-21s last night, what do you make of that?
Very strange, isn't it? Because, you know, what are we keeping him fit for? He's not likely to make the France squad for the Euros.
No.
That suggests he definitely won't start the weekend. Very odd. I don't really... Some people tweeted me yesterday after we chatted about it on the show saying they think Coquelin might be punished for his sending, being punished for his sending off at White Hart Lane. I don't know. Do you think there's anything in that at all?
Possibly. I mean, we've seen the manager do that before. Look at Theo Walcott after we lost at White Hart Lane last season, where he didn't close down a cross quick enough and all of a sudden was basically not used again until the very end of the season because he literally had no choice other than to use him because Giroud was going through a goal drought. He left Walcott on the bench. Like, Walcott was the guy who was going to play on the right-hand side, and all of a sudden he's behind Ramsey, he was behind Wilshire, he was behind Danny Welbeck, even Alexis a couple of times, and I think that was a consequence of what he did at White Hart Lane that day. And I think it's the same for Coquelin. I remember people at the time getting a little bit angry that Arsene Wenger sort of said, well, look, you know, it happens. Coquelin's a committed player. He made a mistake. Let's not go overboard. Let's not kill him for making one mistake. But I think probably what's happened publicly and privately are two very different things.
Yeah. Well, that's classic Arsene, isn't it? He always defends his players in public. Yeah, it is an intriguing situation, the Coquelin one, especially because at the start of the season, he was the one, the player who I was most afraid of losing. I mean, we're going to talk, I think, a little bit today about some of the more disappointing elements of the season. And I remember the day he was injured at West Brom, just thinking, oh, shit, that could be our title challenge gone, because there was just no obvious replacement for him, you know?
Yeah. Anyway, look, he played, Cazorla played, Callum Chambers played, and Joel Campbell played as well. So, I don't know what we're going to do for the weekend. We'll have to wait and see, obviously. But giving those guys a run out probably had a big effect on that team. You know, there's quality added to that under-21 team. So I wonder if it was a little bit about expedience, looking at a couple of guys who haven't really been playing in the first team and looking at an under-21 side that needed just a bit of a push to get itself going. That Chris Willock looks good, doesn't he?
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about him, isn't there? He's a very big prospect. In fact, Arsene's spoken about him in the past. He's someone who you wonder, will he make the step this summer to be involved with the first team, certainly in pre-season. He's 18 now. That's around the age people often get introduced. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he fares, but definitely an exciting young talent.
Right. Okay, so look, there's the under-21s. What else have we talked about? We've talked about the sweary guy. We've talked about the bus. We've talked about all that kind of stuff. Anything else catch your eye from yesterday, Arsenal or otherwise?
Just having a think, really. It looks like it's going to be bad news for Danny Welbeck, doesn't it?
It does. We might wait on that one and just till we get some...
confirmation.
Till we get some confirmation. And I suppose we do have to give a little bit of a shout-out to Twitter at CheksMagicHat, who provided us with a very interesting Photoshop.
Yes, he did. Maybe we'll include that in the blog again. I mean, or is it too revealing?
It's a little bit too... Well, I suppose we could describe it, and you can go check out the timeline of at CheksMagicHat. It's a lady, by the way, and she has Photoshopped the Premier League trophy in place of the pottery... in the film Ghost, starring Demi Moore and Patrick Swayze. And you are Demi Moore.
Yep.
Looking quite sultry, I have to say, yeah?
Yeah, it sort of works for me.
Yeah, it really does. And I'm Patrick Swayze, which I'm not necessarily sure works for me, given especially, of course, that he's dead.
Sure. But that means a replacement is required. So
right.
You could step up into that gap, let's not forget.
Yeah. Have you ever done pottery?
I did it at school, actually.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it, ceramics. but didn't make a career out of it in the end. I wasn't great at it. I don't think I could fashion a Premier League trophy out of clay, that's for sure.
No, I definitely couldn't do that. All right, well, look, will we take a break, come back and do some moments and questions and all that?
Let's do it.
All righty, back in a sec.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra, brought to you today by Cornerstone. If you want to shave better and more cost-effectively, just visit cornerstone.co.uk/arseblog. You get £10 off. You can choose what shaving products you want, when you want them delivered, and you can shave everywhere you like, whenever you like, with all the great German precision-engineered blades from Cornerstone. Check it out, cornerstone.co.uk/arseblog. Thank you very much. Right.
Should we do this?
Well, this was what you were going to be calling Black Wednesday.
Black Wednesday, exactly. The post-mortem.
Yeah. Should we, I mean, we probably need to punctuate this Black Wednesday with some upbeat bits, no? I mean...
Okay.
I don't know what sort of upbeat bits we can bring in. Hang on, we could just do this.
Fucking gave everything today.
Just throw that in from time to
every
time.
Every so often. Yeah, that'll help.
That'll do it. So, we did the best bits yesterday, and there were some very good best bits, bits that people enjoyed. Obviously, this season is far from over. Actually, before we do that, we should look at the football that's happening tonight and what that might mean for the weekend,
because
Sunderland are playing Everton. Is that right?
Correct.
Tonight. If Sunderland win at home to Everton tonight, Norwich and Newcastle are both relegated. Now, the effect that has for us, of course, is that Newcastle are playing Tottenham on Sunday. And if Newcastle are playing Tottenham, having just been relegated, chances are they're not going to give a single itty-bitty fuck about that game.
No. So really, we need something from Everton, and having seen Everton a couple of times in the last few weeks, that doesn't feel particularly likely.
No, it doesn't. But is Martinez one of those managers where just when you think it's just over and done with, something happens where you go, look, actually, he's all right. He's done that thing. Look, he made them do that. They're quite good again. Let's all get behind Roberto.
Maybe. I hope he is. That would be nice.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, because he seems like a nice man.
Yes.
Even if he doesn't know how to coach defending. But then, you know, we've seen lots of that at Arsenal over the years.
Mm.
And second of all, because it'd be great to go into that final day with Newcastle having something to play for.
Yes. So come on, Everton tonight. That's what we're looking for in tonight's games. Other fixtures in there as well. Liverpool against Chelsea at Anfield, and Norwich versus Watford. So, yeah. Not much of that makes any difference to us one way or the other. So, right. The worsties. We picked the best player, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Picked the player of the season yesterday. We're going to have to pick a not player of the season. Should we call it that?
Not player of the season. Most disappointing player. I mean, I suspect I know who yours is going to be.
Maybe I'm going to surprise you.
Maybe you are. But I don't think you are.
Well,
listen. You haven't enjoyed a lot of Theo Walcott's performances this season, have you?
No, I haven't. That's true. That would be fair to say. He's up there. But then again, you see, the thing with Walcott is that I don't necessarily have a great deal of expectation.
Right.
You see, so it's not like I'm going, oh, well, there's a surprise. It's not like that. Whereas somebody like Aaron Ramsey, who I like, has been a bit disappointing for me. I think he's capable of a lot better. But he strikes me, the more I look at him and the more that I see what happens around him, he's a Goldilocks player. That everything has to be just right around him. Now, I'm not saying he's not a player who can't influence games and all that kind of stuff, but it feels like more than anyone, he needs the right partner or the right players around him in the right system. I mean, his best football in the last couple of years has come from the right-hand side.
I think that what Ramsey reminds me a little bit of Steven Gerrard. I think that you sort of need to build your team around him because he's a player who doesn't seem to have a natural position where he just easily fits into a system.
Yeah.
He's almost at his best when he's got freedom. And, you know, that works a treat at Liverpool at times because, you know, Gerrard was so clearly their best player. But at Arsenal, you've got the likes of Ozil, Alexis, who demand that kind of attention themselves. So he would be on there. I mean, another name that springs to mind for me, just in terms of what they delivered against what I expected or maybe hoped for, would be Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Yes, yeah, that's a great shout, actually.
Because, you know, he scored in the Community Shield, didn't he? I think he was in the starting lineup for the first game of the Premier League season. He might not have been. I think he was, though.
That's been
the case in the past, I think two of that, the last three seasons, he's been in the team on the opening day, which shows how determined Arsene Wenger is to sort of get him regularly involved in the side. And I thought the fact that he was picked for the match against Barcelona at the Emirates Stadium at a time when Joel Campbell was in pretty good form, as soon as Oxlade-Chamberlain was fit again, he was back into the side.
Yeah.
Shows how much faith the manager has in him, but he really hasn't rewarded that in any kind of tangible way.
I think that's a better shout, you know, just from in terms of expectation. Ramsey is there, he hasn't done it, but Oxlade-Chamberlain has had a season where I think we all expected him to take a real step forward, and the manager provided him with the chances to do that, but he was not able to. I think it's been a season of regression for him. It'll be interesting what we do. Arsene said the other week that he's not ready to give up. They've put too much time into him, so they're not giving up on him yet. But we're heading into this period where he's going into the final 2 years of his contract, and normally that's when a club wants to tie up the future of a player. Has he done enough to merit a new deal? Would now be the time perhaps to move him on? Maybe a change of scenery would be good for him as a player and good for us, because, again, he's a little bit like Ramsey in that you don't know exactly where it is he plays. Is he a right attacker? Is he a central midfield player? Is he deep lying? Is he attacking? Does he play from the left? You know, there's a lot to be said for being versatile, but sometimes it can be a bit of a hindrance as well.
I mean, ultimately, the numbers do speak for themselves as well. 22 Premier League appearances this season, 1 goal, 0 assists. And that's sort of been the case for him, really, over the last few campaigns. He just doesn't seem to convert to end product. And someone like Campbell, who I mentioned before, is so much more efficient in that final third. It is frustrating because it's clear that he's got plenty of talent, and we've seen flashes of it, but he's just not been able to translate that into consistent performances.
I think that's a good shout for me. I think pretty much everybody else has been more or less average. As we said yesterday, the difficulty that we had in picking a real player of the season, somebody who was truly, truly outstanding, was there because I think just everybody's been just a bit average or slightly below average without being truly, truly terrible. I don't think anybody's been really, really terrible apart from, like you say, Oxlade-Chamberlain there.
There you go. Well, unfortunately, he looks like the guy.
And Theo Walcott.
And obviously they were as well, yeah.
Just while we're on that, there's a question from @FunkyFred, who says, since we're dealing with depressing stuff today, is the British core that Arsene Wenger heralded a failure?
I think it is, yeah. I mean, I think it hasn't really kicked on as they would expect. I mean, when you look at the individuals, I mean, Kieran Gibbs, I think it would be a bit harsh to say he's had a disappointing season. It's more to do with the form of Nacho Monreal, but it's definitely been a bad year for him.
Yeah.
Carl Jenkinson was having a very difficult time at West Ham by all accounts prior to his injury in January. Ramsey, we mentioned, as one of the disappointments. Oxlade-Chamberlain, Walcott.
Mm. While you're on Gibbs there, another question. At Marcus Mangan, Marcus_Mangan, says, what happened to Gibbs? Lost his place due to Monreal? Not good enough to take it back, or a lack of determination? What do you think?
I mean, I do think a lot of it is down to how excellent Monreal's been.
Do you think so? I'm slightly of the opinion that he's hit a plateau in terms of his development as a player. I think he's a good player, but I don't think he's really kicked on the way that we expected him to.
Maybe. I mean, I do think that fullback, it's interesting, Arsene Wenger, I think an area, I mean, we've got a lot of work to do in the summer potentially, but an area he might like to improve on is the fullbacks, because if you look at, say, Spurs this season, their overlapping fullbacks were so important to their game, and they were able to rotate them pretty regularly. They had Walker and Trippier on the right-hand side, and Rose and Davis, I think it is, on the left, whereas Arsenal have kind of been forced to use Bellerin and Monreal pretty much every week. And, you know, you mentioned yesterday you think Monreal's looked a bit tired of late. I think it'd be great to have the luxury to be able to change those players without a significant dip in quality.
Yeah.
So if Kieran Gibbs is unhappy with the amount of first-team football he's getting, and to be honest, he must be, we could see a change there, certainly in the summer.
Fucking gave everything today.
All right, just to brighten things up a bit. All right then. So, right, what do we do then? What was the worst game? What was the worst game of the season?
Southampton.
Southampton away.
I mean, that was... are we having worst game and worst performance? I think Southampton away may have been the worst performance.
I thought, yeah, it was. It was, but I also feel that there was a bit of bad luck there in terms of a couple of decisions that went against us, but it was bad.
What else? I mean, in terms of the worst game, do you know, I think the Manchester United game was one that certainly a lot of people... It's as positive as we felt about the home game, I think the away game infuriated a lot of people, didn't it?
It really did. We had some people here talking about that. Hang on a second.
I've got James Batchelor, who's at Wolfman Gym 21. He said, most anger-inducing performance of the season, United away for me.
Yeah.
It's such a poor team to just not show up.
Yeah, Jay, at that Arsenal guy, says, worst moment of the season has to be Man United away. I incredible hulked into the angriest man on the internet. So it definitely did have a big impact on people. Quite interesting as well, isn't it, that United at home was the best game of the season by a long way, and United away right up there with the worst. Now, what drove me mad about that game was the fact that after we got it back to 3-2, we just didn't threaten at all. There was nothing about the team that was dangerous or threatening to Manchester United, and we still had 25 minutes to play. That was really quite annoying.
Yeah, I mean, and also when you look at the United lineup from that day, you know, a back four comprised of Rojo, Carrick, Blind and Varela. You had Lingard and Rashford in the side.
Mm.
The three subs who came on were Januzaj, Weir and Fosu Mensah. I don't even know who Weir is. So,
no, neither do I, actually.
I think that was sort of part of the frustration as well. We had a relatively strong side out.
Yeah.
United were very weakened at the time. And it felt, you know, it was relatively close to it was the 28th of February, wasn't it? So just 2 weeks on from that victory over Leicester.
Yeah.
We seemed to reignite our title challenge and then we just stumbled again. So I think that was a big tipping point for a lot of people. I mean, Mikey P, Michael Proctor on Twitter said, Man United away relieved me of all optimism and changed my glass to half empty. And I don't think he's alone in that. I think it was a point where a lot of people's frustrations kind of boiled over.
Yeah, well, of course, that was compounded then by that game against Swansea at home, where we lost 2-1 in the very next game. And those two results, what hope we had of staying in the title race, were absolutely gone. After that, so it was a really, really bad week. That was a bad week.
So maybe that would be your worst game then, the United away.
Yeah.
And maybe the worst performance.
Mm.
I'm just trying to think. I mean, There were some pretty ugly ones. The Southampton one, obviously, it didn't really matter, but our performance at Sheffield Wednesday in the Capital One Cup was pretty diabolical.
That was unbelievable, actually, yeah. Because, yeah. I mean, looking back at the team for that particular game, I know there was a lot of youth, but when you look at the team that started, it was Cech, Debussy, Gibbs, Mertesacker, Chambers, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Flamini, Iwobi, Glenn Kamara, Olivier Giroud and Joel Campbell. So, I mean, yeah. It wasn't, you know, if you at that point, Iwobi hadn't made his breakthrough and Glenn Kamara was making, I think, his debut. But apart from that, nine of that team were regular part of the first team squad. And it was really go through the motion stuff. And then, of course, we had the injury, early injury to Oxlade-Chamberlain. Walcott came on and got injured after about 10 minutes after coming on. Not a good day. That wasn't good. It didn't do much to improve the mood.
In terms of other games, I mean, this is sort of less about performance, but games that really stick in the mind as particularly painful ones. I do think that one at West Brom was pretty... I was at that game and at the Hawthorns. We lost 2-1, and having led, of course, and there was the Arteta own goal, there was a missed penalty from Cazorla, there was Francis Coquelin getting his injury. That was a pretty dark day.
Yeah.
And then followed up just 8 days later by the 1-1 at Norwich, where Alexis and Cazorla and Aaron Ramsey, I think, all had injury problems.
Yeah.
And Koscielny as well, wasn't it? I think it was like a kind of mass... injury situation.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. Actually, a number of people have highlighted that. Let me see if I can get it here. Yeah, Mark Ledsam at Ledsam Mark says, worst moment number one, 21st to 29th of November, losing Coquelin, Santi and Alexis to derail our season. Number two, Theo Walcott versus Yunus Kabul. That was his second worst. But certainly that injury spell there. I mean, in terms of the overall results... In the immediate aftermath of that, we didn't do too badly. So we drew that game with Norwich, and then we only lost one of our next eight games, which was that game at Southampton.
Yeah.
But it just felt more and more like we were like a cart that had been going downhill a little bit, and it had some momentum, and just it was getting slower and slower and slower and slower. I'm just going to find one here. Hang on, here we are. Where is it? Christian Cooper, at Chris22 Cooper. He also mentions losing Alexis and Cazorla away, but also the Joe Allen equaliser at Anfield. That fucking goal does my head in right now. Even when I think about it, it wrecks my head.
Well, I think Arsene Wenger considers that a really significant moment. He talked the other day about how the team, you know, conceded. He said, as a rule, our defensive record is good. We've kept 15 clean sheets, but when we did concede, we conceded too many. He said, you know, you cannot concede three goals away from home and at somewhere like Anfield and expect to win. And that, you know, it would have been a massive win, wouldn't it? It would have been a really important result, especially having... Were we twice behind in that game, I think? Yeah. Firmino scored twice and then Ramsey and Giroud sort of replied. And then Giroud scored an excellent goal to put us in front and to concede as late as we did. I mean, it was shades of Neil Mellor and all that kind of thing.
God damn it.
And we then went on from that to drop points in our next two games against Stoke and Chelsea.
I really think that goal had an impact on the team. I think it did. I think if you go to Anfield and you win 3-2, having come through, a reasonably difficult period in terms of results and what have you, if you go there, win 3-2, you take a lot of confidence and belief from that. But instead, having drawn 3-3 to a goal in the 90th minute, it saps you of those things as well. I think it has a psychological impact as well as the impact it had on points. Well,
clearly, I mean, looking at the full fixtures, we actually didn't score in our next three Premier League games.
Fuck.
We drew 0-0 with Stoke. We lost 1-0 at home to Chelsea, which was another atrocious result, really, given their form. And then we drew 0-0 at home to Southampton. Mm. So that was a very, very costly period.
Losing twice to the worst Chelsea side in a long time is also a bit of frustration.
It's a little bit like how we failed to beat the kind of David Moyes United side, you know?
Yeah.
Very frustrating.
Yeah. I think we need something to cheer us up very briefly. So what music will I play? I don't know what music I'm going to play. I'll drop something in.
Drop something in at this point.
We're back. Hope you enjoyed that. Right. What else? What other worsts can we do while we're like in the throes of this misery?
Worst. Well, I tell you what. Somebody asked Stephen Dowling at Stephen Dowling 95. He asked, "Was there any moment that you secretly found a bit amusing, despite how awful it was?" I mean, Walcott against Kabul would probably fit into that category.
A little bit, but again, that for me, that was a bit more like, that was more frustrating than amusing. If I'd seen somebody else do it, it would have been very amusing. I'm trying to think, was there anything in particular? Maybe the whole Gabriel Costa thing, because of the pantomime element to it and how just ludicrously stupid it was.
Yeah.
Maybe that.
It's mainly painful, isn't it? I thought this might introduce some levity, but it's difficult.
Yeah, I'm not thinking of anything there, really. Deepak Kumar Patel, who's at Gunner4Life, he says, "Can you recall any of the most awful commentary?" I can.
Well, I mean, the one from the other day where Niall Quinn said that Arsenal had been really, really good at Manchester City is still fresh in my memory.
Yeah. I have a brilliant example.
Go on.
Michael Owen.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably nailed that question, I would say.
Yeah.
Nothing to add.
No, there's nothing to add to that. Just Michael Owen.
I don't know, really. I mean, I feel like we're now just sort of raking through the bones, aren't we?
Okay. Alex Brannigan at Branagorn, who sounds like he should be, I don't know, in Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, definitely.
Branagorn, you must go now and seek the hobbits. Anyway, he says his worst moment was how annoyed or bad I felt when Sanchez came on against West Ham, and then it turning out to be totally vindicated. So that was a bit annoying.
Oh, what happened there? Remind me.
Well, he came on in the first game of the season. Remember, he'd been like played the whole season for us, then went to the Copa America, won the Copa America for Chile single-handedly, basically. Got about 2 days rest, and then came back to England and was thrown in on the first day of the season because, well, Wilshire got injured and Welbeck got injured and all that, and it pretty much fucked his season.
Yep, that was a bad fun
one. Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't great. And in fact, somebody, Fred Turbin, who's at RLF86, said that one of his low lights was finding out in September that Welbeck and Jack were out until January.
Yeah. I mean,
we wish they'd been out until January.
Yeah.
February and May.
So, okay, here's one final. I think we should do one final worst.
Okay.
All right. Worst owner of Arsenal.
Ooh.
I know, it's a tough one.
It is a tricky one. The worst of all the different owners there are. I'm going to go for Big Stan.
Big Stan, yeah.
Stan the man.
In fairness, he's had a cracking season of being absolutely shit at owning the club.
He has been. I mean, in terms of being a shit owner, he's absolutely been the best. Title-winning form.
Yeah, and he's been remarkably consistent throughout. I mean, from not giving a shit to not caring one bit, to not giving a single fuck about what happens to the team, to not being in any way ambitious about the future of the club, and in stockpiling massive, massive amounts of cash that could have been spent on the team to make it better and give it a chance of winning trophies. You got to say, it's been a fucking outstanding season for Stan.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's what you want from a shit owner.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You don't want any ostentatious displays of ambition by going out and spending lots of money on players that you need. Nobody needs that. If you're going to be a shit owner, and if anybody out there is listening and has got ambitions of owning a football club and you want to be a really, really terrible, shit, prick, bastard, wanker of an owner, then just look at what Stan did this season. It's literally the blueprint. What was that book they used for many years for coaching in England? You know, all the coaches got it, and it was like, kick it up in there and run after it.
Yeah, something like that.
Charles Mitchell or somebody like that, was that it?
Yeah, Charles Mitchell, I think that sounds about right.
Right. So, basically, if Stan Kroenke released a similar book this season on how to be a really shit owner of a football club, it would just sell at least 8 or 12 copies.
I agree. I mean, look, at the end of the day, the man said it best himself. Don't buy a club if you want to win trophies. Or something like that.
Yeah, you wouldn't do it if you were ambitious or if you had any ambitions of winning.
No, I mean, so his manifesto speaks for itself.
Yes. So congratulations on your outstanding season, Stan. Hopefully somebody delivers you a trophy made of poo.
Yes, a trophy made of poo. I'll make that on my potter's wheel.
Yeah, you do that. I'm not sitting behind you, though, while you're doing it.
Fine.
All right, let's have a couple of questions before we go, will we? Just so we can change the mood and make everything okay. Good. Because, James, I mean, do you feel like you've given everything today? Do you feel that way?
I feel that way. Okay. I feel that way. I mean, I'm certainly in lots of pain, which is usually a sure sign. Why do you ask?
Just because, you know...
They fucking gave everything today.
Just so nobody could accuse us of not fucking giving everything today.
Sure. Fair enough.
Yeah.
No, I think I have given fucking everything.
All right.
Have you any questions?
I've got a question. I've got a question, and then you can have a question. Then we'll call it quits.
All right, deal.
So, if you were court ordered, this comes from Alex Wood at Luca Japiness. I don't understand that, but anyway, he wants to know if you were court ordered to live with a non-Arsenal EPL footballer. Is that a footballer? English Premier League, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Who would you choose? So you had to live with them for a year.
Ooh, a year.
A whole year.
A non-Arsenal footballer who looks like a nice footballer. Tricky, isn't it?
Because it is.
I sort of hate them when they don't play for Arsenal as a rule.
Yeah. I mean, there's two ways you could go at this. I mean, I would say... just throwing it out there that someone like Juan Mata seems like a really nice kind of guy.
A cheerful fellow.
He seems like a nice fella, and you could probably have a good time with him. But if you were court-ordered to live with this footballer, that means that footballer has no choice but to let you live there, right? Mm. So what if you lived with one of the big cunts and were just the worst housemate that you could possibly be, like leaving your dirty socks everywhere, putting your feet up on the furniture, not ever cleaning up your dishes, leaving just stacks and stacks of dishes, having parties in the middle of the night when they're supposed to be resting up for a game. So if you were, for example, to live with a John Terry type, you could make their life absolutely miserable by being just a rotten person to live with. I think that's the way that I would go.
That's interesting. I mean, either way, I guess I'm going to move to Stoke, because if I had to live with the footballer I liked, I always think Boyan seems a particularly cheerful fellow.
Do you
I
think
like
so?
Him. Yeah. Do you not like him?
No, I think he prowls the streets at nights looking for victims.
Okay. I like his cheery disposition. I think he looks all right. And then what I could also do is live with Charlie Adam and just make his life hell.
Yeah, but there's a touch of like, do you not think that Charlie Adam already lives in pretty much squalor, I would say. I'd say it's just a dirty front room with horrible brown carpet that hasn't been changed for years.
I mean, he's definitely not cleaning his teeth.
No, exactly. And you have a sofa that when you sat down on it, there would be dust and like bits, and there's probably like an old pair of his underpants down the back of the sofa. You know, if you go, oh, did my change fall down the back of the sofa? And then you're going, oh, crusty old underpants. That's disgusting. And just tins of Tennent's and bottles of Buckfast all across the floor. Remember in the Harry Enfield show? Remember the slobs? Wayne and Waynetta.
Yes, I do remember.
Yeah, that's what Charlie
that
Adams'
kind of
house
vibe.
Looks like, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll be the Waynetta to his Wayne. Imagine what an unholy picture.
Oh my God almighty. I hope nobody photoshops
that.
So
where are you
really
living?
I'm gonna live with John Terry. I'm gonna make his already quite miserable, unhappy life even more miserable.
Great. Maybe hire Stamford Bridge for him though, every so often, just to cheer him up.
Yeah, I will. I'll hire it, and then he'll come along to play with all his friends, and I'll have double booked it with some group of, I don't know who, just somebody else. So it would be really annoying. They run out on the pitch, they're ready to play, and then another team comes out, and then it's like, no, we've booked the pitch. No, hang on, we fucking booked it ages ago. And then there'll be the standoff, and then by the time they've worked it out, the booking is over. Like, make his life fucking miserable.
All right, well, let's have this question to finish with.
Okay.
Wes Hunter at Wezzo asks, if you had to choose one, would you play a tiger at centre-back or a cheetah on the wing?
A tiger at centre-back or a cheetah on the wing? I would definitely go with a tiger at centre-back.
Go on.
Well, I like tigers a lot. I think they're the best. I think they're really great. I'm a big fan of tigers in general. I like what they do. I like how they do it. I like the way they look when they do it. I think there's something majestic and vaguely arousing about tigers. Cheetahs are great also. I mean, they're very athletic. They're very fast. They can run very fast. They're good at running really, really fast. And then that puts me in mind of another footballer who's just very good at running very, very fast.
I see.
You see?
In some respects, we already have a cheetah on the wing.
Yes. So I'm thinking tiger at centre half. I mean, look, if you're a centre forward, if you're a gazelle centre forward, an antelope centre forward, whatever it might be, you're not gonna fuck around with a tiger at centre half. Just the minute you step out on the pitch, you're beaten. So for me, definite tiger at centre half. The other one, no.
I agree with you. We've already got a cheetah on the wing.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need any more. Let's have a tiger at centre half. Imagine if we grew the grass long, it could stalk strikers through it.
Oh, wow. That would be fucking amazing. He's bearing down. Diego Costa bearing down on goal. Oh, with his head is gone. And there's a tiger eating him. I mean,
who doesn't want to see that?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And they're just so beautiful and colourful and
they'd
and
look
lovely.
Great in the kit.
They really would. They really would. White shorts.
We're talking about cheetahs and tigers, but we've got a puma kit. I hope that's not going to create a clash.
Oh, fuck, yeah. Yeah. That would be bad. I wouldn't necessarily like a puma. I mean, they're good, but no. But, you know.
They're not as good as a tiger, are they, at the end of the day?
No, exactly. They don't understand the game. That's the big problem with pumas. They've got no awareness of tactics or anything like that.
Positional intelligence is where they're struggling.
Yeah, exactly. All right, cool. Well, look, there's another one done.
Another one exists. That was a yawn. That was a yawn, guys. The strain is taking its toll. Day three. We're still going.
We're here. But hopefully you enjoyed it, despite some of the worst bits. We're back tomorrow. I'm not sure what the theme of tomorrow's one will be, but we'll
figure something out. Thursday, the theme of Thursday.
Yes, it's almost the weekend theme. Thank you, as always, for listening. We'll catch you tomorrow.
All right, bye-bye.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.